All right, we're in RX land again. Jeffrey, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good, man. It's nice to see you again. It's been a while.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Charles.
How you doing?
Great.
Excellent. So, Wes Dyer, I'm really happy to be here because I wanted to get a sense of what you guys are working on, and especially in relation to schedulers, which is something that's deep, and you guys are going to go far into it.
That's right.
So, can you...
If we're talking about schedulers today?
Yes.
We're also going to talk about time. And all the problems it has and all the opportunities we have. So let's first talk about schedulers.
Okay.
And so what a scheduler is, we've talked about these before. I've even drawn this same diagram before. But just to remind you, a scheduler is three things. So first of all, it's a data structure. So when you schedule items, they get put in some sort of data structure here.
Okay.
Sometimes priority queue, some sort of other things, you know, I could do reverse order or whatever. But some sort of data structure. It has to have an execution context, which may be like the thread pool, maybe the current thread, maybe another machine or something. And the last thing is, it has a clock. And so each scheduler has its notion of time.
Okay.
Now, up until now, what we've talked about when we've done these schedulers is we've talked about time that, when we talk about time, we say, you know, what is the current schedule? What's it's like now? It's like daytime, not now, or whatever it is.
And some of our forum guards have already noticed that there's this now property, and
yeah.
Like, why is there an now property? All of them just return daytime, not now. So why do you have this now property?
That's right.
And today is where we explain why that now property.
What
is
now there. Really means?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
What kind of things?
I've always wanted
it.
To know about that.
So when we talk about now, first of all, it really depends on who you are, right? So if you're running on a single processor, a single machine, and all you do is schedule stuff on this machine, it's pretty obvious that the notion of now is whatever the current processor is telling you is now.
Sure.
It's kind of like the wall, you know, the wall clock time, right? And but then what if I'm scheduling things and now I have two processors and they may have two clocks and now I might actually have the same time between the two of them, or if I'm on two different machines, I'm perhaps separated across the globe, or maybe one's on Mars, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So now the notion of now becomes a little fuzzier, right?
Sure.
Like, what is now? In fact, what is time anyway, right? And this is kind of a big question, kind of a philosophical question. But for RX, it's really, when we talk about real time, what we really mean is that there's some sort of global notion of time for in a certain context.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you actually ask for now, there is definitely a clock that you're running on for the CPU, and that clock is the global time for you. And you get back the time, and the time we hope is strictly monotonically increasing, like time's not going backwards all of a sudden, or so forth. But
sure.
You know, that's kind of things you expect with time. And usually it's a relatively constant rate.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is, if you actually look at this, first of all, different clocks are not the same. I mean, we know this. We have like NNTP in order to synchronize clocks with machines. But it's also the case that a particular clock might actually vary its rate, which is advancing, and might slow down and speed up over time, and might get off and might be off from some other clock and so forth. So there's all sorts of, you know, fuzziness when we talk about what real time really is. So time is not as global as we'd like to think it, first of all.
Okay.
So this is why, that's one of the reasons why this notion of what a clock is so important. So if I schedule something on a scheduler, do I schedule it according to my time or his time? Well, what we're basically saying is that, you know, you can kind of choose, but when you pass in something to be scheduled on a scheduler with a time span, it uses the time relative to that scheduler's notion of time, not yours.
Okay.
But you can ask for his notion of time. So that's kind of what we've done. But there's other problems with time, too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you back up and you think about doing the testing you've done on your UI applications,
okay.
Sometimes it's really hard, right? So like, imagine testing like something that, you know, like a mouse click on a UI for a UI event. Then you have to listen to the UI event, but you have to do it in a certain time frame because you have to wait, you know, some amount of time. But then you can't make the time for the mouse click so small, because typically the test application might not be able to respond to it that fast. And so you usually have to make big times, and you get flakiness in tests, and when you run the test on different machines, then you get all sorts of problems. Or if you try to test a timer, for example, you have to test to make sure the timer fires after 1 second. Well, it's not going to fire after exactly 1 second. It's going to fire within some range of like 1 second, right?
Okay.
So you have to do these kinds of things. So testing becomes really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually, a couple years ago, we ran into this problem when we were testing RX, the operators themselves. And we found that it was extremely difficult to express tests that that both ran quickly were not flaky and had both deterministic, you know, results and so on. And so because of the difficulty, we kind of went to the drawing board to figure out what we could do. And this notion of time that you see in schedulers is part of the outcome of all those investigations.
Excellent.
And think about, like, in RX, we have an operator that's called never, which never fires. Well, how do you test it? You write a test that runs indefinitely? That's not very practical. So,
well, it should be really fast if I say time.never or gatetime.never. Yeah. Boom.
It should be done, right?
Before it even executes, it's done.
Yep.
It's done.
Nice.
So we don't want to have a test that runs indefinitely. We want to have a test that completes almost instantaneously. So this is the kind of issues that we're seeing in RX when testing with notion of time.
Okay.
But like I've said, I've also seen the exact same notion, exact same problems in a number of different places when I've done UI testing or just normal application testing. Mm-hmm. Timing is a big problem, right?
Yes.
And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to abstract away time so it can become really useful to you, not just your enemy, but your friend.
Okay.
Right? And that's kind of what we're trying to do.
Great.
So in order to do that, we have to introduce a new notion of time.
Okay.
So far we talked about real time, which is this kind of global appeal to time. Instead we're going to do what we call virtual time.
Okay.
Pull it right up here, virtual time. And what virtual time is it has a notion of like this, you know, strict. Well, usually it's strictly monotonically increasing as well. At least in our neighborhood, it is. It's a thing that can actually vary its rate and doesn't have to be in sync with the real time. So, for example, I could advance 100 years in a matter of a few microseconds, and I could then slow down to examine a really small piece of time, maybe a few microseconds of the virtual time, and take years to compute that. Right.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to correlate to what's actually going on with some clock or with our notion of the passage of time. I might have aged 100 years, mm-hmm. but it might have actually only processed a few microseconds or, you know, maybe millions of years.
Okay. Right?
And so that's kind of what we mean by virtual time.
So you guys have been like going way out, man. That's all I can say.
That's right.
Good for you.
And so we've had this notion of virtual time, so things can occur in it, like, you know, T0 and T1 and so on. And so I can say things like, I like to be able to say things like, do everything up until time T1, right? And so that means that something that occurs at T0 hopefully will have happened, right?
Okay.
But we do run into one problem, which is that if you try to do stuff in virtual time, it actually has to have side effects to be visible, right? And those effects happen. So if I, like, you know, launch the missiles or something, mm-hmm. and that happens in reality, right? And even though it happened in virtual time, there's some real effect from that. And so you come up with some sort of problem, and sometimes what some systems will do is they'll do some sort of retraction or like anti-events, where basically that if I want to roll back to a point in the past in virtual time, then I can issue some sort of like cancellation or anti-events to things to cause things not to happen. But, you know, I can't say like, you know, unlaunch the missiles. You know, sorry, they're already in flight, right? And we lost connection, right? So what we do is we actually have, with our notion of virtual time, we think about commit points. Basically, we may say that we commit to time T1. That means that everything before T1 has happened, and that's okay. We're not going to go back beat up before that. But I could do other things up here speculatively and then rewind back to T1, because I won't actually have done the side effects at that point in time.
Hmm.
So that's kind of what we are thinking about with virtual time.
Okay, so one of the things I'd like to ask off the bat, I mean, since this is, I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting, very heavy the way you've described it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everybody understands what you're trying to say. My question would be, in a context of a programming executing, show me like how I would use this. So my question really is, I understand what you're doing with virtual time. It's like a virtual machine, but instead of virtualizing hardware, you're virtualizing time.
Yes.
Temporal space.
That's right.
And so let's talk a little bit about, you know, you're talking about writing tests, so you had the question of...
That's one of the things, yes.
Yes, but let's not talk about writing tests now.
Okay.
Talk about, I want to write an RX program that uses virtual time.
Great
How
question.
Does that guarantee me what you're trying to achieve in RX in the first place?
So here's a common example that I've actually come up with in the financial community,
okay,
which is they want to run historical data and then merge it into real-time data that's happening.
Okay.
And let's say I want to process the last day of, you know, stock changes,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want to, I don't, it's like 8 hours or 12 hours of stock trades, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do that, take 12 hours to process it. I want to do it immediately.
Of course.
But there's still some sort of causality link between things that happen earlier and things that happen later, so we still have to have a notion of time. We're not going to use real time, we use virtual time.
Perfect.
And then once we catch up, we can switch to real time and go off we go.
Excellent.
And the reason why you want to still use a timer and not just process it as a for each loop in an iNumerable, but use iObservables, because you want to be able to switch live to like when the next day of trading begins. So you want to use the same code to process the previous day of trading and the next day of trading, and you might even want to be able to say, okay, we just processed the previous day's data and now go live with the current data. Mm. So by using the virtual scheduler and then swapping it out to the global clock, the wall clock, you can use the same programming and the same code, just keep it running.
Nice. Very nice. Cool.
So let's back up again now.
Okay.
Look at scheduler again.
Yes.
And actually look at the interface. And I'll draw a little bit, and then we'll turn it over to Jeff to talk a little about some particulars of the virtual scheduler we're going to introduce here. But so iScheduler looks like this. The actual interface has iDisposable.
It's okay. Just finish it with blue. Okay. So I think people have an easier time seeing it.
Sure. iDisposable. Uh-huh. Schedule of an action. iDisposable schedule of an action and a time span, okay, and also a date time offset now. So we've already talked about how what we want to do is we'd like to have this now not necessarily correlate to datetime offset dot now, but some other stored dot datetime offset dot now or whatever. And you can see here there's actually two interesting things. So a scheduler has two important types here. It has this guy, which is a notion of time, and this guy, which is a notion of time. And the difference between these two, this one's an absolute point in time, and this one's a relative point in time, which is like it's a time span. This one is a point in time, right? And the first thing we notice when we talk about generalizing notions of time is that we actually don't need to have time span and daytime offset. This can be any two things, as long as I can do a few operations, as long as I can take one of these things, add one of these things, and get a new one of these things. In other words, if I can take an absolute thing and add a relative and get back a new absolute, then that would be one operation I need, and I also need to be able to compare absolute times. If I can do those two different things, this can be any sort of data type I want. It doesn't have to be daytime offsets and time spans. So that's the first thing. The second thing I want to say is that today, in order to schedule at an absolute point in time, what you have to do is you have to ask for now and get the absolute time and use your notion of absolute time in order to do the relative to schedule with the relative point in time. But this thing is not really atomic, and so because of that, we'd like to do a new one that looks like this. So the whole thing happens at one atomic operation. So this is kind of the changes we'd like to see in order to generalize time within the scheduler, which is really small. But, of course, what this means is that you could do like this. You don't have to do it this way, but you can make iScheduler generic across what kind of absolute notion of time, what kind of relative notion of time you have.
Nice.
So turn over to Jeff, talk about virtual scheduler.
All right.
So, yeah, this is the interface that we'd like to have.
Okay.
And we haven't made these changes right now because we'll introduce a bunch of generic type parameters which will complicate all our operators, and we're still looking into the best way of doing that.
We sure like to if we could, yeah, though.
So, but what we did for now is we kept the interface as it was.
Okay.
And what we did is we made a abstract base class on top of that. I'll just wipe this whole thing. So we have an abstract class, the virtual scheduler, where we have defined all these methods which schedule with action and relative and absolute. And this one is generic over absolute time and relative time.
Yes.
And then what we did is, because we still want to implement the old interface, iScheduler, we added conversion methods. So we can say to datetime from a absolute, which will return a datetime object, and same with from time span. So this allows you to create these virtual schedulers without having to change the interface for now. And then we added two methods.
And that's because what we're doing, we're basically mapping the notion of absolute relative time into datetime offset and time span.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for most cases, it's pretty trivial to convert between those.
That's right.
And then what we added is there's two methods here. There's a run and a run to. And run to takes an absolute time. So run to is for the easiest to explain. You mm-hmm. give it an absolute time, and it will process all the things that are queued up to that time, including one new ones get scheduled that are scheduled to run before the time that you gave as the input.
So it's like committing to that absolute
yes,
point in time.
Exactly. That's yeah. the commit point. Now run is slightly different. It keeps on running until there's nothing in the queue. Okay. So it starts running and it starts increasing the time. As long as there's stuff in the queue, it keeps moving time forward by single increments.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't move it forward by the whatever
the next,
time
yes.
the next thing is
yes,
in the queue.
Yeah. In our current implementation.
That's
yes.
right.
So it moves it as far ahead to get the next item from the queue, and it does this until the queue is completely empty.
Okay.
And this is how we can do our testing like never, because we say run, and the test completes when the queue is empty.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's nothing in the queue, that means that nothing can fire anymore, because it could only fire by going through the virtual scheduler.
Okay.
And as there's nothing scheduled, there's no new things can be scheduled either, because only new things can be scheduled through the scheduler itself.
Okay.
So nothing will ever happen.
Nothing will ever happen. So there.
So that's the name never.
And yes. Of course, this is white box testing, because we first need to look at our code to make sure that it indeed uses the scheduler to execute things. Because if it just sidesteps the scheduler, it could still fire things.
Mm-hmm.
But because we assume that we can do white box testing, we first see that it indeed only ever sends things out through the scheduler.
Okay.
And one note is that one interesting corner case
yeah.
is if you schedule something to happen at some point in time, and then it schedules something to happen at zero time increments from the current time. So it kind of looks like this. Actually, let me write it right up on the board. It's really clear. I think I can probably wipe this
yes,
right now.
Yes, I think that's clear.
So if I schedule something, where's that blue at?
Here.
I schedule something that will itself schedule, well, schedule an action, let's do A, and it does it at zero time increments forward from the current place, and this one schedules it at some other time t, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then the question is, and let's say I do B and C as well, right around here.
Okay.
And the question is, well, what happens, right? At what time, so we have, well, what order things happening in, and what times do they happen at? Well, at time t, B happens, okay? Because basically scheduled it to happen at time t, B happens, right?
Okay.
C happens after that because it's, well, after that in the code. It also happens at time t. A is going to happen, and here's what the one choice we made, at t plus 1. And the reason why is because we basically say we scheduled A to happen at time t, but it can't happen at time t because it's running at time t. And so that means it's going to happen at the nearest time forward. Kind of like if you said, I want a timer to go off, you know, 0 milliseconds from now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to actually happen at the same time you made that call. It's going to happen at some very small epsilon forward in time. Because it actually takes time to actually set up the machinery for that to happen. And so it's kind of like, and it kind of encodes the causality
okay.
in the events.
And the same thing goes if you schedule something for a time that's already happened.
That's right. Yeah, so just try to schedule something for something in the past.
Yeah.
Yes. Then it can't happen in the past because the past is the past, and so now it's going to happen.
So let me ask you something, though. I mean, you briefly yeah. mentioned it at the very beginning, but I mean, part of the beautifulness of Rx is not only the asynchronous stuff, but also concurrency.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm running on a machine with 4 cores or 8 cores, and I write code like that, I mean, theoretically, it should happen at the same time. Right.
Well, maybe. This actually, here's the question, right?
Okay.
So let's look at two different examples. This will be. Right. This is an awesome question. Thanks for bringing this up, Charles.
Uh-huh.
So we can schedule A at time t and schedule B at time t, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we can also, as a separate example, we can do schedule A semicolon schedule B at time. Let's assume these are absolute times, just for simplicity's sake.
Okay.
T. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is two different ways of writing, schedule A and B at time T. Now, if in this case we scheduled them both at some time, okay. Let's just assume that it's sometime before T.
Okay.
That it's happening at T naught, which is less than T. Okay. So over here at T naught, we did the scheduling, and now for our virtual schedule, it has infinite concurrency capacity. Okay. So that means that both A and B happen at time T. Now, for practicality, in order to get deterministic results, we say that if two things are scheduled at the same time, the thing that was scheduled first will run first. Okay, just in terms of recording results.
Okay.
It makes things, nice when you actually assert things at the end.
Okay.
But we record the times that they occur as both being happening at time T, because there's infinite concurrency in this virtual scheduling thing. Now, the second case, we say this is being scheduled at time T naught, which is less than T. And so T naught's back here and T's here. Now, A happens at time T, right? That's pretty mm-hmm. obvious, I think.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is that now we scheduled B to happen, but B is being scheduled to happen not independently of A, but after A and as a result of A, right? And so it has some sort of causality link. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is that if there's this causality thing that A causes B to happen, that they can't happen at the same time, where this is not the case here. These are actually independent. So even in concurrency, you have this kind of thing. So if I say, do A, and then as a result of A, or actually take the results of A and then do B,
sure.
Then they can't happen simultaneously.
Serial by design.
Yeah, right? Serial by design, exactly. So now what we're really saying is that B happens at time T plus 1 here.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
And actually, this is really important because in the test, you can actually detect. In our testing, for example, we can detect if there's unnecessary schedulings because of other schedulings inside of it. So,
very cool.
Anyway, so this kind of works out pretty well. This particular thing, this T plus 1 thing, is more to do with test scheduling than with virtual scheduling in general. Because with virtual scheduling, you can certainly schedule things to happen. You can have this happen at the exact same time, or that B could happen at the same T because we don't advance time for it. But for our testing purposes, we chose time to advance in those cases. So there's actually one thing we forgot to mention so far is that we have another subclass of virtual schedule called test scheduler that does this kind of stuff. And for its absolute and relative notions of time, it uses, what is it, int?
Long.
Long. It uses long.
Okay.
Long and long. We can basically say, at time 100, mm-hmm. Something happens, and that we can move time forward by 5, which would be time 105. That's kind of exactly what we talked about earlier. We said that in order to be, you can choose an absolute relative types, mm-hmm. which in this case are long and long, such that if you take an absolute and a relative and you add them together, you get an absolute. So mm-hmm. if you get a long plus a long, you get a new long. True, that's a true statement. And second, that you can compare absolutes with each other, which is true as well.
Interesting.
So that's what we do. So now let's back up and take a look at why this is useful.
Yes.
Right? So what we want to do is actually look at some code. And show you our test code. In fact, I think we really personally want to release all of our test code.
You should. Time. That's actually a great idea.
So we're pretty excited about it. There's quite a bit of test code, and it's not only is it kind of useful for figuring out Rx, but it actually is, I think it's pretty instructive code, actually.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's well designed.
Ah.
Let's go to the...
So you have that at what? Can you bounce up the font? Or is that...
Sure.
Oh, we got. This is going to be old school, guys. Sorry. For the Niners. You were spoiling the Niners. You actually have high-quality content now from a Surface perspective.
Oh, I see.
In other words, we're doing screencasts, embedding them into things. But in this case, I'm not doing that. So
that's cool. I kind of like this more.
This is old school, man. This is happening right now. And you don't have Camtasia installed, which is okay. Yep. So tell us. Talk.
Okay,
rock and roll.
What we're seeing here is the test for the return operator, and it's made by most basic form. So, as we said, we have a test scheduler, and this is shipping in Rx today.
Okay.
So we need one up, and let's quickly go to the definition here. So the test scheduler is a virtual schedule of long, as Wes said.
Mm-hmm.
We define increment, which just takes the absolute and relative time and adds them together. We need to provide the conversion to daytime offset. So we're just passing along to the datetime offset the time span 0. And we need to also provide a from time span, which gives us the relative time. And here is where you see our the thing that Wes talked about, that if you schedule something either at current time or past time, mm-hmm. then we'll move the schedule 1-4.
That makes sense.
So that's our test scheduler. Now let's go back to our test code.
Can I say one more thing about this before we go on?
Sure.
So I kind of mentioned this about too many times already to count, but if I'm going to say it again. And so this is one way to embed it as a mapping between these two things, mm-hmm. but we've thought about doing a scheduler where the iScheduler is generic over the absolute relative time, and then you would just constrain the types such that you have to have this increment type of thing between absolute relative, and you also have to have a comparison between absolute things, which is essentially the equivalent to how this is done for our purposes. Okay.
Okay, let's go back to our return test. Okay, so and there's a couple of details that we'll expand on the whiteboard afterwards, but so what we're doing is we're going to call our observable return of a random value that we chose 42 here with that scheduler. So observable return will now fire on next and complete it through this scheduler, and it's supposed to fire that the moment that subscribe happens. And for us, in this case, subscribe will happen at time
200.
At time 200. So it's kind of funny because there's a lambda here, and the return value of this lambda isn't observable, right? So there's a question about when this lambda gets invoked, when the return value, which isn't observable, gets subscribed to, and then when the subscription gets disposed. Right, those are the three very important points in time. And just for simplicity's sake, we have a default in our testing setup that you through our little overload of run here mm-hmm. That picks by default the creation time to be time 100. So when this lambda gets invoked, it's time 100. When we subscribe, the result is time 200. When we dispose, the subscription is time 1,000. Okay. And we just pick those because they're kind of like good defaults, and so all of our tests, we don't have to explicitly state all this every single time.
Sure.
Each time we can just kind of use these defaults and kind of build up from there. So, for example, in this case, now we're saying that the results, which the type of that thing is going to be...
it's enumerable of recorded notification of T.
Yes, which basically has, you know, whether it's an on-air, on-completed, or on-next.
And the time that it fired.
The time it fires, the virtual time it fires at. And it's a list of those things.
Okay.
So it's just a list of what the result is. Just a list of messages, just like this. Like on next happens at time 201 with value 42. It's on completed at time 201, right?
Okay.
And but actually, what it really is, it's kind of funny. So if you were to build, we'd like to release all this. We haven't done it quite yet. But what results really is actually the observer that gets subscribed to this thing. And it's a reobserver that also implements this enumerable of recorded of notification of T. And it basically just stows away all the messages that are happening to it, and it asks the scheduler what time it happens at. So we can actually detect which messages happen which time.
Great.
So,
and as Wes said, the subscription happens at time 200. So the observable return will start queuing up things in the scheduler at time 200 to fire immediately. And with our test scheduler of moving one ahead, if you're already at that point in time, it will come send out on next and on completed at time 201.
In that order.
Yeah. Now, and this, it's important to make the distinction here between virtual time and real time.
Yes.
Because in this case, you're talking about at execution time, right? Real time.
Yes.
So I wanted to point that out to everybody.
Yep.
And most everyone out watching this already understood that, but I have the luxury of being able to ask to make sure I understand as well.
That's right.
All right, rock and roll, man.
Okay, so one slight variation of that test here, the return disposed. You see that we passed 200 as the last argument here,
mm-hmm.
which means instead of disposing at the default time of 1,000, you dispose at subscription time at the same time, like 200. So we were going to fire out our messages at time 201, but we're already on subscribe at time 200. So in this case, we see that assert equal is empty, so we expect no messages to be produced here because we immediately unsubscribe.
Okay.
And this would be something that would be really hard to test if you were not using virtual time. because you would have to subscribe to the observable return and unsubscribe very fast, and like, you have a chance that there's a race that you unsubscribe after the message is already fired out. And this test would have not been able to write that without virtual time.
Perfect.
Let's look at the...
It's a great... And I'm starting to understand this more and more. This is very cool.
Look at the interval test.
Sure.
Time.
Interval time spent basic.
Okay, this one's really fun. So one of the biggest problems we have with... So early on with testing with RX, we actually figured out how to test like return and all the operators that didn't have to do with time explicitly.
Okay.
And the reason why we figured that was because we basically took over the thread pool. And we did kind of what we talked about before, which is we basically run the thread pool till there's no more things queued in the thread pool. And then we say, now we're done. But the problem was is that time reached outside of the thread pool into some sort of, you know, to queue things up to happen at some point in the time. It didn't use the thread pool to do that. And so things that use time would break down in that testing scenario. We still had flakiness with time-based tests. And it wasn't until we introduced the notion of virtual time that we both sped up the tests and made them completely deterministic. So
excellent.
This kind of shows what, you know, what fell out of that investigation. Sorry, I didn't want to do that.
So yeah, what we see here is that we have an interval for every 100 cycles of this virtual scheduler. So as again, we were subscribing at 0.200, so we start seeing our first interval come through at 300 with the values, and it goes all the way to 900. Now what you don't see here is an uncompleted, and the reason for that is that interval is keeps going indefinitely, so there will never be an uncompleted value. But because we have the default of unsubscribing at 0.1000, you don't see any messages coming through anymore.
That's right, and one interesting thing is that one of the on-next messages was going to happen at time 1000, and the question is, why doesn't that one show up, right? We're going to dispose of time 1000, and we're going to have an on-next message at time 1000. Well, is there a race? Well, no, because what happens is, just like I described before, if two things happen at the same time, we have the canonical representation or choice that we basically choose the thing that was scheduled first to happen first. Mm-hmm. In this case, disposable is scheduled before the on-next happens, because that gets scheduled right up front.
Okay.
And then the other thing I want to point out here is that even though this takes some amount of time, we could have said that, you know, instead of time 1000, we could have picked millions of years from now as the disposable time, disposing time.
And it would complete just as fast.
It would complete just as fast. It would just right away just finish.
And even though in virtual reality, if you will,
yeah,
a million years have passed.
Yes.
So this is really interesting. Still, I mean, there's a lot to put in your head, I think.
Yeah.
And so, but keep on going. It's sure. Great stuff, guys.
So, want to look at the select operator?
Yeah, look at select.
Okay, so...
Look at the basic one. Is there a basic one?
This is the basic one.
Okay.
There we go. So, here you see this new thing, create hot observable. Mm-hmm. And we probably should go to the whiteboard for this.
Create hot observable.
Yes, we talked about hot and cold before, and now we're going to talk about it again. And it's going to probably maybe
did you change the definition of it again?
I don't think so.
All right. Perfect. So let's talk about this.
Yeah, let's do. So let's talk about it on the whiteboard for a second, and then we'll come back to the code.
Get the concepts down here.
So what we'd like to do is, the next problem we have is we want to have observable sources, but in virtual time.
Okay.
So we want them basically to create on next, on completed, on air messages in virtual time. They want to pump it out because select... So return and interval didn't have any sources. They just kind of create messages out of thin air. But that's not the case with select, which actually takes a source, which means that that source has to be operating in virtual time, and then we're going to pump out results in virtual time as well. But what we're going to have is two different types of sources we can create, hot ones and cold ones. So for a hot one, we'd like to say, like, X is... And then really what we'd like to say is, you know, it's a sequence of messages like on next at time 100 and maybe value x0, you know, then on next time 200, x1, and so on, right? Mm-hmm. And this is like a sequence of messages. We have to say the same thing over here, but have it be cold. And then the difference between these two is when these messages happen. So... If, suppose, for example, that that I say X is subscribe, in both cases, something here, and I was going to pump in results to whatever I pass in here, the results that, that I specified here. But suppose I subscribed at time t, okay? For a hot observable, what I'd like it to have be the case is that this these messages would come out at this absolute time regardless of what the t is, okay? Unless the, unless these are in the past, and then they, well, they would have been missed, actually. They would never, we actually would have missed those these things. So, like, if t is greater than 100, then I would never see this first message.
Sure. Right?
I'd like that to happen. With the cold one, it's actually completely different. I'd like, actually, the first message to come in at time t plus 100, and the second message to come at time t plus 200,
okay,
and so on, which actually corresponds exactly to our notions of what hot and cold were originally,
okay,
which is that in the first case, with hot ones, what we've said in the past is when you subscribe to something that's hot, it already exists. It already is already pumping out values whether you're listening to it or not, no matter how many times you're listening to it, and it does the side effects once. And you may miss things, you may not, whatever, because those things are happening whether or not you're looking at them. Cold things only exist once you observe them, and exist for each time you observe them. And so, like, a timer is a good example of this one. A timer will be spun up for each time you subscribe to it, and it will be relative to that point in time. So if you ask for a timer for 1 second in the future, it'll be 1 second from the point you subscribed to it, not from the point you created it.
Okay.
Right? And so you can see the notions. Like, a timer would be closer to this notion of cold, although you could create a hot timer that fires at absolute time 300, and if you happen to be listening to it, great. If you don't, oh well, too bad for you, right? And so this is what we mean by hot and cold.
I understand.
And now we're going to look in the test code to see how we use these notions. So the first thing you'll see that it says scheduler.createHotObservable. The reason why it does that is because it's going to create the hot observable on the scheduler. Essentially, what it's going to do is it's going to schedule these messages at this point in the code,
okay,
to happen.
And so note that this createHotObservable is an extension method that we haven't shipped yet, but we're planning to add that pretty soon.
Yeah, we're just going to clean it up a little bit for general consumption, and we'll ship it on out.
Good.
Yep, so we schedule a bunch of little next messages, and then notice that one of the first one is before our standard subscription time.
Okay.
And then you see something weird here. It's an uncompleted followed by an onNext. And the reason that it's weird is because the Rx contract doesn't allow that, right? We say an observable should have multiple onNext messages followed by either an uncompleted or an onError. And after that, there should not be any new messages. So the reason we add that is because we want to test that is indeed the contract that we're following.
Yeah, that we won't produce incorrect data based on an incorrect source.
So then, just like in the previous test, we have a scheduler run. And in this case, we're going to use that hot observable that we just created, and we're going to test the select operator. Now, inside the select operator, we do something interesting too. First of all, we just increment every value by one.
Okay.
But we also increment a global variable, well, it's a local variable, but it's like some global state.
Mm-hmm.
So we're side effecting every call to select. So now we're going to do a similar as before, our equal assertion. So notice that the values start only at 210 after our subscription. So the first or next from the hot observable is dropped because it fired out, but we were not listening. And then the values are incremented one as we were expecting. So we assert that the selecting operator indeed incremented the values by one for every one of them.
Okay.
And then there's only one uncompleted. So here we're asserting that all data that was sent after the first uncompleted gets ignored.
What this one hot and cold observables, actually, you can actually get the list of subscriptions that were caused during the run to them. And it actually records what the time that the thing was subscribed to and the unsubscribed time for that particular subscription. So I can sense that indeed we subscribed to X's at time 200, and that time 400 it automatically got rid of the subscription.
Okay.
And then the last thing is basically just checking that the invoked function, well, was invoked four times corresponding to 2, 3, 4, and 5, which is what you'd expect. For example, this onNext should definitely not have been causing invocation of the side effect.
And the reason we have to check that separately, because just checking the results that come out doesn't mean that this function hasn't been invoked more times.
That's right.
You have to really test it separately.
Yep.
Interesting.
So that's kind of what Select looks like. And you know, some of the tests are more complicated. Like there's Select Many, which has streams of streams, and so that the messages themselves, instead of being like values like one, mm-hmm. are actually hot or cold observables themselves. But essentially, it's the same principles just being applied again and again.
Excellent.
And so this is how we do testing in Rx. Mm-hmm. There's a few, you know, basically just variations on the same theme, and this actually solved our problem of how to do testing with reactive things. It got rid of our flakiness and made things deterministic.
Okay.
And so now we have thousands of tests that run, you know, just in a matter of seconds, and they test things extremely thoroughly.
Of course, there's a couple of things that you still have to worry about, mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we have hit a couple of issues with over the last couple of months is that if you use the immediate scheduler, things tend to break in different ways. So our virtual scheduler is a scheduler that is a queue-based scheduler. So when you schedule something, you immediately get the control back. Mm-hmm. So it's lazy. Our immediate scheduler is stack-based. So the moment you schedule something, it will execute that before returning control to you. So we have had a couple of cases where there were corner case bugs with the immediate scheduler that we didn't catch because we were writing most of our tests using the virtual scheduler. So using the virtual scheduler doesn't guarantee that your Rx code is correct. You still need to think about what happens in the case of a blocking scheduler.
Or you have to think about concurrency testing too. Does it free you from concurrency testing? Mm-hmm. Like our implementation still uses locks and that kind of stuff. And so that means that we have to test to make sure that, you know, no deadlocks happen and so on. But what we've kind of done is basically separated, you know, testing kind of this deterministic, streamlined, very, very easy to understand semantics from the concurrency testing. We can take this one in or these tests and actually turn them into concurrency tests in some ways too, which we can talk about some other time.
Sure.
That's what we've done, and it's been really helpful. Another thing is that we've actually taken the same concept instead of for testing and run over historical data. So, for example, for the financial community guys who might care about running historical data then transferring over to real-time, you can do this by scheduling on some virtual schedule that will then transfer over to real-time eventually after it's exhausted everything in its histories.
Interesting.
And that can run, you know, in a matter of seconds and then switch over to real-time. Maybe, you know, millions of years of data or something, I don't know. But that's kind of what we've done.
No, it's really interesting. So, I mean, just to kind of high-level conclusion.
Yeah.
You've created essentially a way to use virtual time. And the good thing about virtual time is that it happens at a different time than real time.
Yes.
Which gives you the flexibility to write really useful tests for your Rx code, mm-hmm. that uses schedulers and therefore interoperates the time, real time, to ensure that what you're doing is correct. Now, the one thing that confused me on this was Jeffrey said that that's not true because it won't necessarily find bugs in your Rx code. It will find bugs in your Rx code where you use schedulers.
Yes.
That's so the whole point,
you
right?
It finds a lot of bugs for you and will make sure your test code is correct. It doesn't do everything.
It doesn't do concurrency testing.
It doesn't do concurrency testing, and like immediate scheduler is a form of concurrency.
But let's talk about brass tacks here. If I write a program in Rx that uses virtual time and I decide to have some code execute where it makes time goes backwards, when I leave my office, I want to be 10 years younger. I want more hair. I want less gray hair, and I want to drop about 30 pounds, man. I want 10 years ago.
Sounds good.
You guys are really remarkable, man. But seriously, great work. And I really do hope you ship that code for devs out there to see how to write tests correctly.
Next release, I promise it.
Right on. Yep. Take care, you guys.
You too.
And we will talk soon.
See you later, Charles.
Cheers.